Alan Cutler Show with award-winning TV sportscaster Alan Cutler.
There's no such thing as an Alan Cutler humble opinion. It'll be a softly spoken opinion. There's no.
Okay.
Well, I appear on a lot of radio shows, and I'll tell you, in all honesty, I enjoy being on your show more than any because we have such a good time and talk about a lot of great things.
Yeah, we tried to bust your chops, but you are a chop. Thank God you're not edible.
Hello, Mark. Mr. Pope, 1996.
Oh, my gosh. What? Hey, let's give it up right here. This is my guy. Yes. I'm so happy to see you.
Hey, gratitude is a skill, guys, that if you practice, will give you a joyful life regardless of your circumstances.
We might be 0-for-7 in the first 4 minutes of the game, and then we run off like 9-of-11, and the game's over. That's just how it is. We shoot, and we wedge, and we shoot, and we wedge, and we shoot, and we wedge until the end of time, yeah?
Yeah.
We see it over and over. That's who we are. Okay, that's where we're going to be. All right, let's go. Moving on. Here we go.
Good afternoon. I'm Alan Cutler. So many things to lead with today. Such a lovely problem. And I could lead with the Reds. I could lead with tickets for baseball games, which is absolutely stupid. I could live with Big Pete with the home run yesterday, but I'm going to lead with Pope. They put out a video. It's about 7 minutes long. And I suggest if you like Kentucky basketball, you watch it. We are taking a few snippets. That was one of them from that. And here's what I love. And I'm really, Jimmy, trying to be careful. I promise you not to be too gaga. I really don't think we get how smart and how good this guy is. And I'm really trying to be careful because there's a hype machine on, which is part of Kentucky basketball. Things are good. Or really negative if you say Billy Gillespie back at a certain point in time. But, Jimmy, he's even preparing his kids for when things don't go well in a practice or a game and how to deal with it. Woo. Woo. I don't know who said it first, but I'm a big believer in it, and I've seen it in motivational things all the time. And I think it's one of the problems with kids today. And I had to learn this on my own. But I think one of the problems, and it's one of my pet peeves, and I know kids like it, but you go to a soccer game with kids and everybody gets kind of like a participation trophy. You know, you could finish fourth place as a trophy, this, that, or another. And I actually don't like it. I think encouraging kids is really important. But I also think if you don't teach kids about failure, if you don't get to deal with losing and you grow up that way, when you lose, you're screwed because it's amplified. And learning how to deal with losing, which I've had to do, isn't fun. But it prepares you for the next step and you have to learn how to deal with it. And what Pope is doing with a positive spin, he's telling his kids, look, we're going to miss four in a row. It happens, but we might make 7 of the next 9. So keep on shooting. Keep your head. Keep your head. Keep your head. And what would Cal do if he missed a couple? I never take a guy out if he can't make a shot. It's the other stuff. Well, sometimes it would be the other stuff if you don't play defense. But did I ever think he took a guy out or had a short leash at times? Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Am I ripping Cal? No, I'm just telling you there's a difference. That's all. Not saying anything about negative about Cal. He's in the Hall of Fame. But you know what? In some ways, he's kind of an old fogey and isn't going to change because I'm an old fogey and I still try to change. It's the difference between me and Cal. No, that's not true, Jimmy. Something else. My bank account versus his.
Don't forget, go up with a rebound for one with one hand. You're out. Don't forget about that one.
You know, and I happen to agree with that. But you know what I never understood? Never, ever, 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 ever understood. It happened way too many times in games because he pounded that in the kids' heads during practice and they still did it.
Yeah.
So they couldn't break the habit. Oh, no, Cal used to say, and this is positive. This is kind of like a Pope thing. Do it next time. Do it better next time. That kind of thing. Yeah, really. I mean, can anybody in a game revert back to a bad habit? Sure. Do I expect these kids to be perfect? No. But there were some teams, good point, Jimmy, where this going up with one hand for a rebound happened too often. It used to baffle the hell out of me because I know he's screaming them in a practice not to do it, and they would still do it. So that either tells me these kids couldn't learn, which I don't believe, or sometimes they tune Cal out, which I think was also partly true. You know, Cal's an acquired taste. There's a push-pull kind of thing there, and that's fine. But good point. Good point. And what Pope is doing, really strong. Really, 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 really strong. He's preparing them for life on the basketball court, which is you're going to have to deal with crap. You're going to have to deal with frustration. You're going to have to deal with a referee, what? Making a bad call. You're going to have to deal with a teammate not passing the ball at times when you should have gotten the ball to whatever. You're going to have to deal with all kinds of things. Deal with it. Just deal with it. Deal with it. We missed four in a row. We might make seven the next time. We're going to play a bunch of sound bites, but Jimmy, here's the other sound bite from this little section, and then we'll play three in a row after that. This is Pope from the video that UK put out, and I've said this many times. The folks at UK with their video, Greg Gorm and all those people there, they don't do a good job. They do an amazing job. Here is Pope.
It was like Lamont here in the corner. Lamont could have shied away after he missed a couple threes, but he didn't. He's like, fine, bring the next one, bring the next one, bring the next one. That's relentless. Right now, we've had some places where maybe we didn't agree with the referee's call, or maybe Green made a good play, or maybe we had a miscommunication. All of the world is trying to suck away your energy. And a championship, like, you know what? I'm not paying attention to how I feel right now. I'm going to go hoop. That's what it is. You just refuse to give into the frustration. We're going to feel that every single day, every single game, and we're going to get great at refusing to let our energy change.
Wow. I'm not saying that's my soundbite of the year, Jimmy. I'm not going to go that far, but I think it's really powerful. And actually, not that he needs the money, but Mark could, I think, make a lot of money as a motivational speaker. One, for what he says, and two, his enthusiasm, the way you communicate not only your words, but your body language. Jimmy, that was pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. He could go around in even speaking to people or just speaking like holding coaching clinics. I think he would be an incredible one to host coaching clinics for like local high school coaches around here, regardless of your sport. Just the way he conveys his message is incredible. Like his tone of voice, just the whole thing about it is awesome.
You know, I don't know this. I'm going to assume that he will invite all kinds of high school coaches to watch practice.
Yeah, regardless of sport.
Yeah, more basketball than anything else. And I don't know about regardless of sport. I would think if you're a football coach and you reach out to UK saying you'd like to see what he does, do I think they would say yes quickly, actually. Mm-hmm. But it, one, for recruiting, and two, for building relationships. I think it's powerful. Let me set up the show, and then we're going to go to, on that second sheet, Jimmy, clip number two, where it says, here's the deal. Deuce Williams will join us at 12:30. He's always good with his no-filter comment on Kentucky. Then at 1 o'clock, Sully, Tim Sullivan, who's been a wonderful columnist for a long time. And I'm not best friends with Sully. Have I known him for a long time? Yeah. Do I respect him? I respect him when I met him, I think, in the 1980s. He was a longtime columnist in Cincinnati. Then he went to San Diego. Then with the Courier. And now he's working. Oh, my gosh, I'm going blank. Jimmy, help me out. The name of the publication he's working for, kind of doing a weekly thing at this point in his career. And I was sad that the Courier let him go, as so many very talented people have been let go by newspapers. And one of the reasons for having him on is the obvious. If you know anything about Tim, he dealt with Pete Rose, really dealt with Pete Rose. And he's got some very strong thoughts, and he did not back down from his feelings. Now, on the one hand, you say, if you're a columnist, you're not supposed to. But some do. He did not. And it caused him a lot of constipation, especially because of the relationship he had with Pete. So I think, and I was going to ask him to come on during the season anyway, Tim has done our show probably three times, four times, something like that. Just was thought on Kentucky and Louisville. But this specifically was about Pete Rose. Okay, Jimmy, let's go to the second section of clips. And it'll be clip number two with Pope. You know, and visualize the obvious. He's talking to the team. And in some of this, he's kind of yelling at the team. When I say yelling, you know, instructing as stuff is going on. And some it's when, especially these long comments, the team is kind of huddled around him. So this is Mark Pope teaching life to his team, which he hopes will then transform them as people. And yes, basketball players.
So here's the deal. This is us as a team. Okay. We make shots. We put together the best shot making team in the country. Okay. And so when we have 54 in the first minute, what's the answer to that? We didn't shoot well in the first minute. Shoot it and wedge. That's the answer. Because this happens to us all the time. We're 54 in the first minute. We're 70-freaking-7 in the second minute. Okay. We might be 0-for-7 in the first 4 minutes of the game, and then we run off like 9-of-11, and the game's over. That's just how it is. We shoot, and we wedge, and we shoot, and we wedge, and we shoot, and we wedge until the end of time, yeah? No. We see it over and over. That's who we are. Okay, that's where we're going to be. All right, let's go. Moving on. Here we go.
Good stuff, Mark Pope. Here is number three, with Mark talking about the obvious things that happen during a basketball game.
In a game, we're 0-for-4. What are we going to do? We're going to free shoot. Let's go. Here we go. Come on. Here we go. Oh, yeah. Ah. Go, Marty. Go, Marty. Let's go, boys. Yes, sir. Come on, Blue.
I don't know about you, Jimmy, but I've always really liked the sound of sneakers screeching in a gym. I've always liked that. And my thing was, the first time I hear it during the year, that gets me excited even more about basketball. It's just a thing with me. You're smiling. And I always remember one of the first comments I got about Rupp in the early 1980s was that Rupp was the only guy to talk in practice, and Rupp at times didn't want to talk at all, and Rupp at times just wanted to hear the sneakers screeching, because they used to run fast break plays ad nauseum, and not, there were only a couple of plays, but they would run them like crazy, and the sound of the sneakers when there's nobody there, and it's just the team, there's a purity of it. It's a me thing. You're kind of smirking. I don't know. It's an old time kind of thing. I don't know anybody. I'm sure there are others who gets off on the sound of sneakers, because it tells you the purity and the squeaking sound when it's higher. My perception is they're working a little harder, and then that might be silly. It also might be the level of quality, what sneakers are left. It might be how you run. So they could be really stupid, but that's just how I roll.
I'm sure there probably is. If you've got a good ear, it's kind of like if you're listening to batting practice, you can hear, like in an empty stadium, you can hear if someone really gets a hold of a ball. Yep. Same with like the, you could probably hear different if like, oh, they're really moving in there today, just based on the frequency of the squeaks.
Yeah, the time, I'm sorry for stepping on you, Jimmy, the times that I was, and I should have done it more around the Pirate batting cage, the short time period I did Pirate baseball, the sound of the bat.
Yeah.
Was just a really lovely thing. And especially because during BP, as you're saying, this, well, for a while, there's nobody in the stadium until they open up the gates. And that's usually going on while they're doing it. The end part of it depends if you're the home team, visit the team, that kind of stuff. It's not important, but that sound is really, really, really good. Now, this last sound bite to me is important because he's reaffirming what is going on, and he's having the guys on the team leave practice with a positive thought of the change that should be going on in any basketball team. This is not just Kentucky, but any basketball team. This should be going on. It's probably going on in every team, that if you're not getting better from the start, then you're idiots and you stink and you're going to be awful and all that kind of stuff. But getting past that, get past that. This is all about setting a tone on these kids as people.
We're getting better. We're going. It's going to come fast, boys. So listen, we got Banner Camp, and then like as soon as Banner Camp's over, we got Midnight Madness. The next week we got Blue White Scrimmage. Next week we got Exhibition. Next week we got Exhibition. Next week we got First Game. Like it comes fast, okay? And we're going to be ready. You guys are doing an unbelievable job. Quote of the day, somebody? The magic that you're searching for is in the work you're avoiding. We're not avoiding work. Let's go. Come on. Let's go. Good job, boys.
Good job, fellas. Good job. Team on three. Family on six. 1, 2, 3. Team. 4, 5, 6.
About work. And he's reinforcing that we're not avoiding work. And he's congratulating his team on what? Working. And that sounds really simple, but it's really huge because most of this stuff is simplistic. Most of the stuff is just normal foundation stuff. It's not reinventing the wheel, but how you look at it mentally. And I just love it. You miss four shots, keep on shooting, because guess what? You might hit seven on the next nine. And Jimmy, it's going to happen. It would happen with any team, one. Yeah. But the other part is he's telling him to keep on shooting. He's telling him and telling him and telling him and telling him to keep on shooting. That's why, even though he's done such a wonderful job recruiting so far, and granted, I think it was fortuitous and maybe lucky that this was the year there's a couple kids in the state that are that good nationally. I think that helped him per se. I also think, from what I've read between the lines, some of the kids that he's recruiting that are the kind of kids that Cal recruits, okay, that he's going after, you know, they've heard him. They actually like him to the point that they've got Kentucky in their 3-4 list or that kind of thing. But I really believe some of these kids, and I don't blame them, they want to see what Kentucky looks like. I don't blame him. You're making this big decision. You're a future NBA player. A lot of these kids that he's talking to will be first-round draft choices. A couple of these kids are going to be lotto picks. All good. So why rush? Plus, here's the other thing, and I wonder how much this goes on. Like, you wait a little bit longer, can you make a little bit more money? Because somebody else comes up with more money, and then your person says, well, they now have offered this. Will you offer that? Do I think some of that is part of it? Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I also think with some of these kids that it's not the last dollar. It's what is best for me. And maybe I'm being hopeful and I hope I'm not being naive. Now, it's one thing if somebody's offering you double versus another, whatever the hell that is, that's one thing. But if somebody's offering you X and another is Y, and the difference between the X and Y isn't a lot, but you're more comfortable with the coach, which will help your relationship, and you're going to make a lot of money. I think some of these kids like a Jasper Johnson who didn't make a decision based on money, I don't think he's the only one. I just don't. And I just don't. I think there are a lot of coaches that turn down jobs that it could be more money because they're happy where they are, or maybe they don't have the things in that step where they're being offered where they think they can win as easily, or they're waiting for a better opportunity.
Yeah, and I think, too, it's – I don't want to say I'm excited for the first piece of adversity for this team to face, but I kind of am to see – and I think for the players to see, the fans to see, and for us to have Mark Pope prove it to us that he will continue this same message even when there is adversity. Like, let's say when they do start out 0-7, does he keep the same mellow minds? Not mellow, but does the message stay the same? Because we've all seen coaches who can talk and talk and talk, but when stuff hits the fan, you turn into a completely different person. Then the players turn on you and they go, wait, whoa. You've never been like this. Your message was this way all offseason, and then now that we get to whatever your message was saying, you flipped on us. And I think that will be big for recruits, for the players on the roster to see, like, okay, so he is this same coach. He is keeping this same message when we reach these opportunities that he's talked to us about.
You know, here's the bad news about what you said. I agree with you. I think there's a lot of coaches that act that way. Maybe I'm being not naive. Maybe I think I know him better than I think I do, and I think I know him really well. I don't think it's part of his personality. I just don't. But you're right. I want to see how that happens, too.
Yeah.
I will be shocked if this message doesn't continue.
Yeah.
Now, could it be a little louder on the bench? Hey, I told you guys, you're 0-4. Keep on shooting. Will the temperature maybe go up? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
That wouldn't surprise me, the heat of the moment and that kind of thing. But I think the message, which is what you're talking about, I will be shocked beyond belief, and I will do a mea culpa, and I will say I was so wrong. That's one of the things about him I like that I think kids are going to say, that he's really consistent.
Yeah.
And what you see is what you get. And I think when some of these kids who are looking at Kentucky see the style, that will be very, 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 very powerful. By the way, since we're talking Kentucky, Jasper Johnson, he was in the Wooten Top 150. It's one of those deals where you have to be invited to go. It's in Vegas. And name the top player. And I keep on saying this, and I've said this since I saw him in the Sweet 16 when he was a junior, when he was too light. No big deal. He was a junior. And he had long arms, and he obviously needed to fill out, and he's filling out through maturation, lifting, and all that kind of stuff. And I just said he's scratching the surface end, and I still think he is now. And it was a move that I retweeted about a week ago. He put a move on a kid. I mean, I know, so what? Broke the kid's ankles. I don't think people realize how good this kid is going to be. That's me. I really don't. I really don't. It's already 12:21. I was going to do five things by now. Okay, let's do a few things with Terry Francona. Do I know him well? No. I actually got to know him a little bit when he was in Pittsburgh, believe it or not, because he was a backup first baseman. And his dad's name is Tito. And he was known then as a really good guy. And people were saying he was going to be a manager. He was so friendly, it was off the charts. And so I get he's won all these World Series and stuff like that. I get his record is great. You got crappy teams, your record's not going to be as good. But I'm telling you, he's one of the finest people persons in any sport. Any sport. I am telling you, players trust him. I am telling you, he's got a quiet, calm demeanor that people trust. And so what I said was, didn't take a genius. I know I've told this story before. When Sam Newton was, when I say AD, general manager of the UK athletics department, he and Mike Krzyzewski were close. And he asked Mike if he wanted to be the coach of Kentucky. And you know, if somebody says, oh, where'd you get that story? Blah, 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 blah. Some of you guys just make me laugh with some of the crap I see on Twitter. The story came from Sam Newton. And he said it with a laugh, too. And I remember it was at then Wildcat Lodge, and he's talking about it. He said, yeah, I asked Mike. Why wouldn't I ask Mike? And then he was talking to Mike about who he would recommend and that kind of thing. You ask. There's nothing wrong with asking. There really isn't. Krzyzewski had said at one point the only job he seriously considered was the Lakers. And he had literally one foot out the door. This is not breaking news. He talked about it, whatever, but he was never motivated to go anywhere. Why would he? He had everything in Duke. And all the Kentucky people didn't like Mike Krzyzewski. I said it forever. He was the coach of Kentucky. You'd love him. He's a Duke. You don't like him. People are funny that way. So when I think that and see that, I never disliked him. I didn't care what he coached at Duke. Guy's a hell of a man, hell of a recruiter, hell of a person helping kids out. Okay. Doesn't matter to me. Did he coach at Duke? Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter at all. Anyway. So I said the obvious thing was to call Francona. I got to tell you, I thought the odds of him doing it without having any inside information, Jimmy, thought was very slim. You make the phone call. Everybody knows he left Cleveland, a great situation where, you know, totally left alone. The difference in him coaching in Boston, where they were a pain in the poop to him, and Cleveland is night and day. Night and day. And so he's signing a 3-year contract. I think that's in USA Today. I don't know the money. I'm actually really curious about the money, Jimmy, because, one, I think he would have had a phone call from every team that's out there. Every team would make him say no, unless he said, I'm definitely not coming back because of my health. And so I wonder how high the Reds went, and I don't think it's the kind of money they got to pay David Bell $5 or $6 million in the 2 years he's old. I don't think it's David Bell kind of money. I'll be shocked if it's not at least $7 million. And I don't expect him to be the highest paid skipper in baseball. I don't. It's interesting. Jimmy had retired for good. In all probability, 2027, he'd go in the Hall of Fame. So this is going to be delayed, which is fine. And some of the negative comments on Twitter, well, you know, I can't believe he's going to such a dysfunctional organization. Terry Francona does need the job, even though he obviously wants to get back in baseball, and obviously he would have choices. I think anybody who knows anything about baseball understands that. So that means two things. One, whatever plan the Reds have, and by the way, the Reds always have a plan. there, I answered one guy back, and I shouldn't do that. And I was nicer than I was really thinking. You know, for you to say the Reds don't have a plan, honestly, is stupid. It's really stupid. There's no way they don't have a plan. Carl didn't become president of the Reds without a plan. Now, the question is, Jimmy, do you like the plan? There's a big difference between the two.
Yeah.
I have never believed for a second since Carl took over that he didn't have a plan. Never believed it. And I think there's a lot of people who don't like the move say, wow, they didn't have a plan, whatever. It's a stupid thought. Sorry, it's dumber than a box of rocks. And there's a difference between not liking a plan and saying they have no plan. And when I see some fans saying they don't have a plan, you lose me. That means you don't know squat about baseball, you don't know squat about Reds, and you don't know what the hell you're talking about. And you're entitled to your opinion. And I respect that, but I know more than you know. They have a plan. They have a plan.
Yeah, what they should say is, I don't like their plan. That's fine to say as a fan. I see the plan that they're, like you said, it may be a bad plan, but there's no organization, you're right, that doesn't, they're just flying by the seat of their pants every single day. They walk in and they go, what should we do?
Yeah, except for one thing, I agree with what you're saying, Jimmy, but I really think there are some fans, and it's a dumb opinion, who think they don't have a plan.
Yeah.
It's a dumb opinion. I can have dumb opinions, and that's just how I talk. It's a dumb opinion. Now, the execution, did I like when they signed Candelaria for the $45 million? I thought that was dumb. I got what their plan was. I thought it was dumb. They were kind of settling. And there were some other moves I didn't like. And then they've stolen some players and stuff like that. Fine. But the point is, not only is Francona buying into the talent, the young talent, okay, he's buying into the plan and the future player coming up and maybe some quiet promises that Carl made to him about going out and getting players. And here's what I wonder. First of all, Terry Francona doesn't want to be a general manager. He doesn't. But I wonder if there'll be more communication. I'm betting this, Jimmy, and I do not know. I'm betting Francona will be counseled on some moves more than David Bell was. Just a guess. Just a guess. Just a guess. Plus, if Francona disagrees, he'd be just like David Bell. I'm sure there were times that he disagreed, but when you come out, you're all in unison. But it obviously came out that Bell and Carl had serious philosophical differences, and I think that had more to do with the change than anything else. And I also don't believe for a second, this is really important, you don't call up Terry Francona a month ago, the way he is as a person, and say, by the way, if we make a manager change, would you be interested? Now, do I think that sometimes happens? Absolutely. I believe Terry Francona would say, he probably wouldn't even be interested in the Reds. There are a lot of people who will say, if that's how you're going to treat the current manager, I don't want to be part of you. I really believe that. And his reputation as a human being is so good. I think he would say, you know, I don't want any part of this. Then they might do that to me down the road. Well, that's how they'll treat other people. So, you know, a couple things I saw. Well, you know, they had this plan all along. No, they probably had the plan to call Terry right away if they were going to make a change. Yes. Yes. I think that probably took Carl, you think, 5 seconds? Less?
Yeah.
Less? And I would assume he probably had a list of three people right away, and then they did research on a whole bunch of other people. And sometimes the research, even you know, another person brings somebody up, brings somebody down. I think they did more work than people think. They had a plan. They have a plan. And I'm being asked, do I think they'll move Ellie to center field? I have no idea. I have no idea. I think they should. That's Hal McCoy's thing. I absolutely think they should. I think not moving to center field is just absolutely ridiculous, but it's me. We're late, but I have to throw this out quickly. Tell me if you saw this. Did you see what the ticket prices are? And I have a reason for asking you. See what the ticket prices are, according to Logitech, for the average prices for the NL and AL division playoffs coming up. Did you see the ticket prices? Wouldn't you guess that New York and Los Angeles would be number one?
I would assume so, yeah.
Me too. Me too. We're both wrong.
Really?
The Phillies, I would have had in the top three because I know the history. Yeah. Phillies are number one with 417. This now, when I thought about it, doesn't surprise me because they don't have a lot of seats and you can't get a seat in there and there's a lot of wealthy people there. San Diego's number two with 319.
Yeah.
Now, if they had a 70,000 seat stadium, would it be 319? Hell no. It's a thing. It's a real thing to go to games there. It's beautiful what they've done out there. The Mets doesn't surprise me. They're third, 293. This surprised me. Kansas City is fourth, 256. You notice I haven't said the Yankees or the Dodgers, have I?
No.
Next, it's the Tigers, 223. Next, it's Cleveland, which I would have guessed they'd be the lowest. I get it as playoffs, people more excited, but you know, they don't draw as well as I think they should have. And whew, what a bullpen. It's a six-inning game with them. It's amazing what they've done with not paying players and keep on getting talent in. It's amazing. Second to last. You ready for this? Yankees at 177. And that honestly shocks the hell out of me.
That's wild.
Last is the Dodgers at 154.
I don't know. I'm trying to think of how that makes sense. I feel like there were some regular season games, like to probably get a ticket to the game where Shohei could have potentially gone 50-50. That ticket was probably more expensive.
It was more expensive, and I saw it, and I don't remember what it was. I think it was 2+.
Yeah.
Now, this could also mean that some of the Dodger fans say, we're going to be in this a long time, so therefore, I don't know. Phillies number one at 417, Dodgers last at 154, Yankees second to last at 177. Who knew? Deuce Williams coming up next. Terry Page. Not a very good, a great licensed massage therapist. Her expression, you don't have to live with pain. Text her, call her, 859-373-0578. She books up, so you might have to wait. I think she's worth the wait. 859-373-0578. Coming up, Deuce Williams, former Studley linebacker for the University of Kentucky, coming up at 1 o'clock. Sully, Tim Sullivan, really smart columnist, and his relationship and his thoughts on, and he knows, Jimmy, he knows, on Pete Rose. Alan Cutler, 1300 AM, 92.5 FM.
The Alan Cutler Show on ESPN Radio with Alan Cutler. Podcasts on Apple, Spotify, and Google, Monday through Friday.
Welcome back. Alan Cutler, 1300 AM, 92.5 FM. Deuce Williams, a legitimate Studley linebacker for Kentucky, who wasn't as slow as one of his teammates suggested. We've been through that.
You are getting better. I'm telling you, I'm warming you up. It's starting to come around. We're getting it right now. Correct.
Who was that player who said you were slow?
Van Hise.
Yeah.
Hey. So you heard the follow-up to that.
Yeah.
He openly admitted that I got him. But I will give him credit on that one. He claimed that he had an injury, and Van is a man of his word, so I'm going to give him that. But the record shows he was a 4-7.
By the way, I hate to say this, but I did believe Van instantly because he's a straight-up guy, and he did have a thing. And he had this long explanation that his agent told him not to run. And guys go through that constipation. Do I run? Do I not run if I have an injury? And it cost him a lot of money. So the heck with not believing, whatever. It cost him money. And probably his NFL career. Because he runs a 4.45. He's drafted a lot higher. They have guaranteed money. With the guaranteed money, they don't get rid of you as quickly. And there's a lot of guys who end up making it because they got another year because of the money invested, where some other guy might have been as good in another year, but they're going, we don't have a lot of money in you, and we got to get rid of somebody, so we want to get rid of you. That happens all the time in pro football.
Absolutely, and I believe that. I listened to the segment with him and Marty, and I wholeheartedly believe that it cost him a lot of money, and it cost him his NFL career later on, unfortunately. He was a good football player.
Yep, and by the way, he's talking about Marty Moore, also former Studley linebacker for Kentucky. So you're looking to forward to the hunting season.
I am. You know, it's going to start later this month for me. I'll go start off in North Dakota with some good friends and get a chance to run our dogs up there. And that's always a really good time of year for me.
So how many ducks? And by the way, I saw it on Facebook. You have, it's a side business that you do, but you know, you breed dogs and you sell them all across the country. And there's a picture that sticks in my cranium. You had tons of dogs with you, and you had tons of ducks that you got. So how many ducks will you normally get when you go duck hunting?
It really all depends. I mean, we had a really good season last year. So in North Dakota, we really killed a lot of ducks, and we killed crane, and It just really depends on the time. It's all about the flyaway, really, and how the migration happens. So how the ducks are transitioning to where we're hunting. And if the weather pushes them down, well, we're going to kill more ducks naturally by the numbers. And if not, it's probably going to be slow.
Well, give me an average. Just throw a number out so people get a temperature.
I'd say last year, between all the people that we hunted, we probably killed 400 or 500 ducks.
How many people are you with?
We probably, just depending on what area we were in, but, 15 to 20 people that were hunting our groups over that time in different states. And so it turned out to be a really good year.
And you all eat them all. This is not, you don't kill for the sake of killing.
It all goes home and all is consumed for sure. I'm a big believer in that. I'm not going to go hunt anything that I'm not going to eat. So whatever I bring home, I eat it. And if I'm not going to eat it, I was telling you earlier, my wife is not crazy about wild game. I don't bring it home. I just don't.
So you don't have your own man cave freezer that out in the barn or something where if you then brought it out and were cooking, Jackie would say it's okay?
I do now. So last year I did not have that man cave freezer because we were in transition of homes. But we have our home now, and I do have a freezer in the barn. And so you gave me some ideas on being able to open that up.
Are you a cook?
I love to cook.
Are you a good cook?
I think I am. I think if you'd ask my wife and my kids, I think they would say I'm a pretty good cook.
Well, if you need somebody testing, let me know.
You got it, man. Always. Always.
Okay. So let me throw this at you. Mark Story wrote a column, and I want to have Mark on, attempting, and that's what a columnist is for. How the 77 team started, and I'm not saying this team is like 77. That's one of the great UK teams of all time. But I get what he did and why he did it. It was logical. It made sense. It was kind of fun. That's what he does. It's all good. And there's no way I'm suggesting this is like 77. But it is possible that this team might end up being much, much, much better than I thought. And it's much, much better than maybe you thought. And just the thought of saying that is kind of nice and positive and all that. And I really believe that Brock continues to improve. He needs to get out of the pocket quicker at times. He needs to get rid of the ball at times quicker. He needs to not wait as much. Little things like that. But he's already gotten so much better in all these things. I think he just needs snaps. And I wouldn't roll him out all the time. It drives me crazy that he doesn't, because he's a big, strong man and he can run, but he throws really good on the run. And if the defense has 5 seconds to try to cover Brown or Key or Ferry, a couple of the other guys, they're going to make some big plays. And I don't get why they're not doing it. Maybe it's a process of, as he gets more and more comfortable, things will change. But this kid has improved tremendously from game one, and you have to give him credit. And there's no reason to believe it won't get much better.
Hey, I'm going to go back, and I'm not going to say I told anybody so, but if you go back and listen to my comments from a couple of weeks ago, I said I'm locking arms with Coach Stoops, and I believed in that at that time. And you have to give time, it's a process, right? Everybody's going to get better. I think we got a lot better over the last couple of weeks, right? And you just don't go toe-to-toe with Georgia and then turn around and beat Ole Miss and not have a good football team with a lot of talent. It just doesn't happen overnight. And I will give credit to the coaches, especially our offensive coordinator. I think he's done a really good job over the last couple of weeks, really going to what the strong suit, right? And really letting Brock kind of come into himself. And I think we're starting to see that. The kid had a really good game last week, and I thought he played strong against Georgia. So I'm very happy of what I've seen the last couple of weeks.
I think Brock, and we have some sound we've played and some sound we haven't played yet. I think Brock is what you see is what you get. He's kind of the strong, silent type. I think he's very religious. I think he's very grounded. I think he's very calm. I'm trying to think of the last quarterback that was as calm as he is at Kentucky. I didn't say he's the best quarterback. Come on, let's not get stupid here. Yeah. But when it comes to being calm, and I go back to the early 80s, you know, they've been a lot of really good quarterbacks here for a team that hasn't won a lot, which I think is kind of interesting. And Ramsey was before my time, and it's not that he wasn't calm, but he was, you know, fiery, great leader, that kind of stuff. I think Brock's leadership skills will only get stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger. And he's kind of like the calm Pied Piper. I see that developing with him because you keep on hearing, shows up every day to work, shows up every day with a regular attitude, shows up every day calm and working hard. And in the long run, to me, that's a beautiful thing. And here's the thing. He's not a one-year guy. He's not a one-year guy. And so looking forward, which I do a lot, there's a ton of potential for him and this team offensively.
Hey, so one of the things you look for in a quarterback is one that doesn't get rattled. Let's go back and look at it. If we kind of go in reverse a little bit, outside of the first game, you start to see him kind of settle in. And for sure, the last two games against elite football teams, you didn't see him get rattled much. And that's what I love to see from a quarterback and a leader, somebody who's going to lead your team in tough situations. And I think we talked about that. We're going to find out who are the people who are going to step up and be the leaders for this football team. And I think you're slowly starting to see the cream rise to the top right now and who's going to lead this football team, no question about it. And Brock's one of them. I give him credit.
I'm sorry for stepping on your juice. Deuce Williams, kind enough to join us for a couple minutes, formerly Studley linebacker at Kentucky. And you know, I got a text saying, did Deuce play football when they had real helmets or was it the soft helmets? And I thought I'd let you defend yourself.
Man, look, I played football when there was face mask and helmets. I'm getting a jab about that from being old. But no, in all seriousness, all joking, you know, I'm excited about this football team. I really am. But I do have one thing for you I want to throw out. I think is very interesting if we can go down that road for just one second.
Go for it.
Man, so I listened to Lane Kiffin's presser after the game was over. And he made a very, very important comment that I think that we should talk about a little bit. And he said that, look, I'm going to give credit to Coach Stoops. He stepped out of his character on a 4th-and-7 when he threw that pass to Barion Brown. And I think that's very, very important, not only to this football program and this football team, but also those who might have had some doubts about Coach Stoops and his coaching style. And look, I'm giving all the credit to the call. It's a very gutsy call, but I think it's one that will go down that we'll remember that might change the direction of this Kentucky football team. Would you agree?
Yes, and not only that, but hey, Jimmy, it's 20-1. Jimmy will find that exact soundbite quickly because we've played it. Jimmy, yep. If you can find it, give me a thumbs up. When you have it, Jimmy's fast. Now he's going through the computer. He's looking.
Which one is it again?
The one where he talked about Stoops being out of his normal self.
The Lane Kiffin one?
Yes.
Yes.
You remember which one it is?
Yeah. Here it is.
Okay. Jimmy's fast. Here it is.
I got to credit Stoops. That's not anything he's probably ever done in his life. And, you know, he's got out of his character. And 3.5 minutes left, so I commend him for doing that. And it's I'm sure your little ESPN percentage is probably at 98% winning at that point. So, good throw, good play by them.
Now, I don't think he'd have done that 5 years ago. That's me. It just his style as a person. And so, I wonder, on the one hand, coaches don't respond to criticism, the good ones, but it stays in your craw. It just does. It just does. And sometimes it makes you think. And then here's what we don't know. We don't know if that affected him. He says it did not. Fine. You don't know the private conversations with his coaches about taking more chances. Could they have convinced him? Fine. Did he go back and think, okay, we had a point in time to make a moment in my career if we could have beaten Georgia. And then maybe you think about it on Monday, but in the moment, you just don't respond quick enough in the game against Georgia. Especially when it was 2nd-and-8 and they should have run the ball on 3rd down and 4th down and stuff, but either here or there. And the last thing I don't want you to respond, Nick Saban changed. And so Nick wasn't an offensive guy with throwing the ball around, and it's okay to change. I actually think it's pretty smart because you need to adjust to the times. And Saban saw that with the rules because he's a DB genius coach, as Stoops is a big-time DB coach, that the way the rules were, it was easier for wide receivers. So all of a sudden, he's getting better wide receivers because he tells them they're going to throw the ball and they're throwing deep, and it changed. And so Saban changed. Could this – now, Stoops is still going to pound the ball. Let's not get silly here. But yeah. Could this be the change in one Mark Stoops for the future? Not all the time, but letting loose a little more. Yes?
I think the answer is yes. And I think you'll see it more. And, you know, Coach Stoops, I think he's defended his call against Georgia by not going for it. But being as competitive as he was, I think if you really get in his gut and think about those times, I think he might have said, I might have made a mistake. I should have took a gamble. My team had a chance to win. And he went on the road and took a chance to win, and it paid off for him. I think you'll see more of that in the future. And look, you and I know this, right? And everybody that's listening to the show knows that Coach Stoops is going to pound the ball, and he's going to be very deliberate about it. He wants balance. You heard him say that over and over. But I will do think you're going to see him take more chances, and I think it's going to pay off for him in the future. And I was proud of him. I was proud of our football team for taking a chance to win. It was very important.
I laughed at this on some site that I don't know. Maybe he's reputable or she's reputable. I don't know. I don't like how it was written. There's too much crap out there that, you know, it's one thing as a reporter, you sometimes know something because I dealt with this, but you couldn't give the name behind it because somebody's job could be in trouble. And you gave your word. And I had to break a lot of stories that way. And there were some stories that I've never told, ever, 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 ever told, we'll never tell. And some of these people are no longer here. Seriously, just the way I was.
Yep.
But there's too much of this crap that goes on. Well, you know, a source tells me, it's just a bunch of BS. So apparently it got around yesterday that some Ole Miss fans were concerned that Kentucky was stealing their signs. So two things. One, it doesn't bother me if you steal signs. I'm serious because that was going on in baseball in the 1940s. Usually the old third base coaches were really good looking at stuff and knowing signs, and that went on whether you liked it or not. And if you're smart enough to figure out, more power to you. It really doesn't bother me. And a lot of stuff with the Michigan thing really honestly didn't bother me as much as bothered other people because I don't think they're the only ones who do it. Plus, with film and stuff like that, you can do it. Did you hear the stories when you were at UK? Were you practicing in the back still, or had you guys moved?
No, we were in Shively, so it wasn't in the same location. So it was the old Nutter Field houses where
right.
we were.
Right. Okay, but when you were outside, were you in the back where those old small houses were?
Yes, we were.
Okay, yep. So yep. When I got here, you had to have heard the story. When I got here, and Kentucky wasn't any good, when I got here, the rumor was is that those houses were being rented. They were really cheap, and there were teams that would show up and video Kentucky's practice, which I thought was hysterical. And you heard those stories, right?
I did. I definitely did. And it was talked about during practice that people were potentially were filming us, which, you know, unfiltered, Alan, I mean, that's a bunch of bull. Let's just call it what it is. And here's my belief in that. Can somebody pick up on signals? Yeah. But at the end of the day, you still have to play the football games. People have to make plays. And I mean, they could know it's coming, and they still, our team has to stop it or has to execute against it. It's just the way that it is.
You know, to me, it's the same thing. Is there's keys, as you know, to offensive linemen. If, you know, they're leaning forward a little bit more, very often you notice how the hand's a little different and there's more pressure on the hand. It could be a run play because you're going forward versus the lineman maybe dropping back, that kind of thing. Well, that's stealing signal. It really is. You're looking at body language. It's no different. Stealing a signal is stealing a signal, so it really doesn't bother me. But here's the thing. On KSR this morning, they were talking, well, that's really stupid because everything's going through the helmets. Well, KSR is wrong because early on with Kentucky, and I don't know the percentages, by the way, so I'm going to tell you that straight out. One of the problems Kentucky was having, that whoever was hooked up to the headphones coaching, well, they apparently – either misinterpreted or was told differently or whatever, yet there were some hand signals coming in from the sidelines where the defenders got that right. So there are still some hand signals going on. What percentage? Have no clue. Yeah. Maybe it's stopping because maybe they've gotten comfortable with the headsets. But you know, and I know, technology is at times this crap is going to go out, so they better get used to doing it. I don't know what percentage of hand signals, but there are still some hand signals going on. It's just not the same. So that comment didn't make any sense. And the point is, you can figure it out. You can figure it out. I don't give a rat. Stop me. The Green Bay Packers were running that sweep left and right all day in the early 1960s. They didn't care. They didn't care. Their goal was to get 4, 5, 6, 8 yards with Horning and Jim Taylor before your time, and those two guards that could pull. They had guards that could run. What a revolutionary idea. That could pull out and run and do it. Didn't matter. You knew what was going on. Everybody knew everybody else's plays. In the old days in the NBA, when there were a few teams, the Celtics used to talk about, hey, we knew all their plays, but they knew all our plays. They would call a play number out, okay, and the Cincinnati then Royals, that's how far back I go, they knew what the play was. They knew what the play, everybody knew what the play was, but they did it anyway. So this is BS hype in social media world that I laugh at. It's much ado to nothing. You're right. You got to stop them.
Yeah. At the end of the day, that's what it's all about, and it's execution. And, you know, if you go back and look at how Mummy stays, right? He hardly ever had a headset on. He sat there, he gave all the signals from the sidelines. So I don't believe in it. I believe in execution and people making plays, and that's what football is all about.
You know what it makes me do when I hear that if Ole Miss really believes it's true? You know what it makes me do? This is nothing against Ole Miss personally. Wah, 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 wah. Seriously.
Look, you know, if you go back and look at Coach Kiffin and his history and comments, I mean, it's obvious he was pretty agitated. One of the reasons why I want you to play the clip is he's agitated. You know, he just got beat on a game that everybody thought they should win. If you poll everybody, the percentages are very low on who thought that Kentucky was going to win that football game. Honestly, I thought we had a chance to beat them. If you go back and look at history over the years, Kentucky against Ole Miss against ranked teams, you'll find out that Kentucky has beat Ole Miss a couple of times, once in my era that I know about, on ranked teams. So it's happened. There's a history there.
Justin Rowland came up with this, so I give him credit. Often a guest does a really good job. And I have said, and I have been frustrated, that I don't know why, one, Barry and Brown needs to touch the ball 10 times, and I don't care if it's on sweeps and the rounds. You know, they're not kicking to him. I don't blame him. I thought he'd be the punt return guy. I wonder if they don't think he can catch the ball good enough, although apparently they didn't want to wear him down. That doesn't make any sense. I would have Ferry in the save 5 plays, but, you know, he takes a punt back to the house. It's worth 5 plays resting off on the sidelines. Me just drives me nuts. He should touch the ball 10 times. And my thing has been my pet peeve forever. Throw the damn ball deep. He just found a way to get it. Okay. I don't care if he's double teamed. If you have to double team him all the time, that means something else is going to be open. I don't know why Kentucky, with a strong arm quarterback, doesn't throw the ball more. Here's Justin Rowland's stat from Twitter. Interesting for Kentucky's offense. Barry and Brown and Jamari Macklin have only been targeted a combined, and he uses caps. I love it.
Yep.
3 times on deep throws this year. Vandergriff is 2 of 3 for 109 yards on those throws. Why the hell? Look, I'm not saying throw the ball 40, 50 times. That's not Stoops. Why the hell are they not throwing the ball deep more often? Not 15 times a game, but 4 or 5 times a game. And even if it doesn't work, you tell me, you play defense. The safety is going to go deeper, and some of those little 3-yard runs won't be 100 yards, but they might be 14, 15, 12, 13 yards because the safeties can't come up quick enough to make a play. And the guy in front of you has a little time to move and shake and make a move because you're not on top of him. Is that too technical for the people listening or no?
No, it's not too technical. And listen, on defense, really, you're going to have to keep the defense off balance, right? So you're going to have to stretch the field. And we haven't done a good job of that. But in all fairness, too, now let's go back and think through it. The offensive line early in the season wasn't where we needed them to be. And so we didn't have the time to really air out the football down the field because we had people rushing off the ends and was way too much pressure. I think we've slowly gotten better running the football, which is going to keep the defensive off balance. And now I think you're going to start to see them open up and throw the ball more. I mean, Dane caught 8 passes last week. It looked great. Berrion cut the long pass. We have to get the ball in Berrion's hands. He is just, he's dynamic. We all know that. Dane is going to be his breakout over the next several games. You're really going to see him step up. He's a really good football player. He's got the attitude of his daddy, which I played with his dad, and his dad was fiery like that. I really like the kid.
Good comment about his dad. And mom and dad raised him very well. So it's a wonderful family. Just a wonderful family. Before we say goodbye, when are you going duck hunting? When's that date?
23rd. I roll out of here, headed to North Dakota on the 23rd, and look forward to kind of a few days away, and we'll be gone about a week. So it'd be a good time to just kind of get the dogs out and go clear my head for a little while.
Wait a second. Did you say Jackie was excited that you're going away?
She probably is. She probably is excited.
As would Judy. Who are we kidding? With Judy. We got to go. I got two things. One, thank you very much. Two, make sure you say hi to your dad. Three, was there something about Kentucky you didn't say that you wanted to say?
Yeah, one last thing. Let's give credit a couple things. One, our defensive coordinator, Brad White, what a great job he's done in that defensive football team. I am being an old defensive linebacker, I'm ecstatic about what we're doing on defense. And for all those that doubted Coach Stoops, get on board. This guy's a great football coach. I said it earlier this year. Let's hitch our arms with him and let's go and see this team throughout the rest of the season. I really want to see this team get it done.
Jimmy, you don't have a duck call with you, do you?
No, I left mine at home.
Okay. Deuce, hopefully you'll join us before you go duck hunting. We will open. Jimmy will have a duck call to introduce you.
Man, I'll look forward to that. I'll even bring one. We'll do some duck calling together as we start the show.
Can you do a duck call?
Sure.
Let me hear it.
Well, I don't have my call right now, so I can't do it just by my voice.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
Okay. Next time you're going to bring your duck call.
I'll bring it on. We'll start.
The levels this show continues to go to never cease to not amaze me. Hey, Deuce, bless you, dude. Thank you so much. Appreciate your 2 cents. And really good stuff. Catch you down the road, brother.
Take care, guys.
Thanks. Deuce Williams with his goatee. Going for the winner. Getting ready for going duck hunting and says, hey, Stoops does a great job. So he is excited. We get it. Blue Lotus Health. Now also providing a licensed massage therapist, 859-533-0914. Acupuncture. Blue Lotus Health. Acupuncture. Ramon Carriager, really good friend, has been great to me. He's helped me out. He's helped Judy out. Andre Sales Road, a super, super smart dude. I don't understand it. I keep on saying it, but I know it's helping me. And I hope this sounds weird, but it's true. He'll be sticking needles in me 20 years from now. One, I'm alive. And two, I think he's going to help keep me around. I really believe that, by the way. Blue Lotus Health, 859-533-0914. 859-533-0914. Tim Sullivan, looking forward to talking to Sully. Coming up next, Alan Cutler, 1300 AM, 92.5 FM.
The Alan Cutler Show on ESPN 90 Filter Sports Show in Kentucky. It's the Alan Cutler Show with award-winning TV sportscaster Alan Cutler.
Welcome back. Thanks to Deuce Williams. Did a great job. He's going to go duck hunting. And Jimmy, I think we're going to be eating some jambalaya duck when he comes back. Isn't it amazing that they have killed 15 guys? How many hundreds of ducks did he say?
A lot.
And not just for the sport. They eat them all, that kind of thing. So he's going to Dakota, and he'll always have a story, and his stuff on UK is really good. Now, Sully, I don't remember. Maybe you do. Somewhere in the 1980s we met. I don't remember if it was the first time in Lexington or the second time. I think the first time. I could be wrong. But Tim Sullivan, longtime outstanding columnist in Cincinnati, then San Diego, then the Courier Journal. And still doing some freelancing, just wrote a piece for the Lexington Herald Leader. And I had you on a list just to ask you about just the general state of the state of Kentucky anyway, but I pushed it up for obvious reasons. Your relationship with Pete Rose is, to me, classic. And would you give the folks kind of a temperature of how it was, what you did with them, and how it changed?
Well, you know, when I started writing a column in Cincinnati in late 84, Pete had just come back as player manager. And, you know, I spent a lot of time with him chronicling his pursuit of Ty Cobb. In fact, I held a seance with Ty Cobb at one point because we were just so obsessed with that storyline. And, you know, he was tremendously entertaining, a lot of fun to be around, always had an opinion and a one-liner and a an anecdote, and you know, for a writer, as Tom Callahan wrote, he was like a narcotic. But when the glory subsided, and we had to kind of assess Pete as a manager, and ultimately as a gambler, you know, the tone definitely changed. I mean, I remember the column I wrote the night that that he broke Cobb's record, and it was pretty fawning. And looking back, probably overwritten. But you know, as time went on, you know, I started to see more of his flaws and wondered about his commitment. There was a day in spring training when the Reds went to Vero Beach, where the Dodgers were then training, and the bus arrives, and Tom Lasorda is kind of waiting, and he says, "Where's Pete?" And, well, Pete couldn't be bothered to make that trip. You know, he managed the way he played, like a star player who didn't have to do the some of the drudgery of spring training. And I thought, you know, he set a poor example. I criticized him for that. And you know, as the gambling became more well known, and we all knew that he bet on the horses. We didn't know, certainly I didn't know that he was betting on baseball. But as the evidence piled up, it, you know, it kind of fell to me to call for his head in his hometown, which did not make me a very popular figure. But you know, it was what I felt I had to do. I mean, I, you know, the line that I used is borrowed from Shakespeare. It was not that I love Caesar less; I love Rome more. I love the institution of baseball more than I love Pete Rose. As much affection for Pete as I had, I just thought that he had crossed a line that couldn't be crossed, and ultimately, his fate was pretty much sealed. And the saddest part is that he never recognized or took the steps necessary to gain reinstatement. You know, he could have, I think, been in the Hall of Fame years ago.
Yep.
Possibly reinstated. I don't know that it would have been a good idea to have him involved anywhere where he could get inside information. But, you know, no one was a better ambassador for baseball during his playing career. And no one has stained it more deeply than he did, you know, as an addicted gambler.
Did you deal with threats back then because of your stance? And the other thing is, I love the fact that you always had the ability. I try to have the ability. You can have affection for Pete, but you have a job to do. And the affection has nothing to do with doing the job. You wrote what you thought was right. Not only did I not know he was betting on baseball, I was dumb enough to think he wouldn't be so stupid to bet on baseball. I knew about the horses. I think everybody knew. I assumed he was betting on NFL football the way he talked about it. Assumed that. Didn't know, but assumed that. But I'm going, he's too smart to do something that stupid. And obviously I was wrong.
Yeah, I remember there was a story about him landing in a helicopter at Churchill Downs, and I think I was doing a notes column, and I said, you know, Pete, you know, don't rub baseball's face in your gambling, you know. And then there was the famous incident where he won the pick six and then denied that he had won it, and mm-hmm. sent some, you know, somebody else to the window to collect.
Yes,
and that it kind of spiraled from there. You know, and I think in retrospect, and I've seen a couple of writers who've reflected on this. One went to Pete's house and was struck that he had a television in every room. And another was kind of stunned by how he reacted to hockey scores, you know, and it came to him later that, yeah, he probably was betting on these hockey games and lost. You know, I think to a certain extent we were naive about the extent of his gambling, and he didn't do a great job of covering his tracks, because once it broke that he had been doing it, the accusers came out of the woodwork and you know, looking to either even a score or get paid themselves for information that could incriminate him, and you know, he was dealing with a lot of unsavory characters. I've never seen evidence that he bet against the Reds, but I don't know that he didn't. People will tell you, you know, experts will say that nights that he didn't bet either way sent a signal to gamblers if he had no confidence in the pitcher that night. You know, it was kind of sad. I mean, I assume that gambling addiction is a disease like any other addiction. I don't know that it's treated that way, or certainly not by Major League Baseball. But you know, their desire for him to come clean and get help, and he lied about it for close to 15 years.
You know, my thing was when he was going through that, and you found that when he said he only bet on the Reds, I don't know what he did or didn't do either, you know, against or anything like that. I have no idea, but you're betting on a team and you're the manager, a guy that could probably use a day off. Are you pitching him because you got money on the line instead of giving him a day off? Those were legitimate questions to ask that never got answered, because how you might be influenced based upon the dollars you might have put, you know, on a bet or something like that. And did that affect how you treat people that you were supposed to take care of to protect their arms? Everybody gets tired, but, you know, protect their arms and don't abuse them because you have money on the line. And I don't think anybody could ever answer that.
Yeah, I think that's a very valid question. The other thing is, once you start betting with bookmakers on baseball, which is the cardinal sin in baseball, you have put yourself in position to be blackmailed. And, you know, they have all kinds of information about you. And if you lose enough money, and I don't know how much Pete netted or lost total, but he was known to not always pay off. And you put yourself in that position. They come to you someday and say, okay, you're going to, you know, fix this game, or you're going to do things to hurt your team's chances to win so we can collect down the road. I mean, it's a slippery slope, and, you know, there's no easy way out of it if you're in his position.
But you probably, I'm guessing, took a lot of heat for taking what you thought was the right stand on Pete back in Cincinnati. And today it would be with media and social media, it'd be tons worse, but was it really uncomfortable for you? Did you ever have to watch your back or anything like that?
No, not really. I mean, there was a fair amount of criticism, and one day I opened a box at the office and there were a pair of black roses in there, and someone had attached a poem, and I think it went something like this: "These roses are dead and you should be too. Pete Rose forever, USOBU," something like that. You know, I was kind of amused by that. And there were, I got rolls of toilet paper, or a roll. I shouldn't say rolls, it wasn't plural. And there was, you know, a lot of people who were extremely loyal to Pete, to the extent that they, you know, refused to recognize reality. I mean, there was Bob Trumpy had a radio show, and he went on the air at one point and said something to the effect that, well, you know, the government is through.
I think Tim just...
he had been very critical. People use anonymous sources. But finally someone pressed him on it, and he said, well, I am the source. And I said, well, you work for the FBI? You know all this stuff? He was covered for him.
That's wrong, too. And I have a lot of respect for Trumpy, but I just lost a lot. That's just wrong. There's a right way to handle it and wrong way to handle it. And I'm a little surprised he would do that. But maybe, I don't know, Trumpy's not that we were really close, but I didn't think he would do that kind of thing. I saw you put something up that was interesting. Honestly, I didn't think about this, that if he is paraded through Cincinnati, you think this might rival Muhammad Ali, which was one of the, you know, great processions that I've ever seen in my time. Do you think it might be that big? Tim, can you hear us?
Not on me.
I'm sorry.
I missed the last part. You were talking about Ali.
I never thought about comparing Pete to what we saw after Muhammad Ali passed. That procession in Louisville was just I knew it'd be unbelievable. It was really unbelievable. You think it's possible if they take him through Cincinnati would be on that level, possibly?
I think it would be enormous. I mean, he was a hometown hero, and I think thousands and thousands of people who would show up if there was a funeral cortege with Pete's remains in it. I'm speculating. Know that for a fact. I don't think Bill Clinton would show up. I don't think Billy Crystal would show up, but I think you would see a lot of the Big Red Machine make an effort to be there.
Yep.
And you know, baseball people who competed against him. But you know, in my time in Cincinnati, I was there 25 years. I don't think there was any competition as to who was the most beloved athlete in that town. And, you know, Johnny Bench was probably second, but it was a distant second. And, you know, a lot of that had to do with, you know, Pete being the hometown guy and the way he played and honored the game and the way.
We're having a little problem with that connection again.
Jimmy, do me. Went about things, you know, how hard he played. You know, he's so versatile, 5 different positions. He was an all-star. So, and 4,256 hits.
Yeah, not only that, but he was a great fielder in all those positions too. Jimmy, do me a favor. Give me a thumbs up when you have it. Sully, I want to play a short soundbite. I don't know if it's true or not. I can't verify. It's the last interview Pete ever did. I can't tell you, seeing his face, he didn't look well, but that doesn't mean he didn't do a couple interviews after that. Can't say. So I can't change who I am if I don't know. You know what I'm saying? I want you to listen to what Pete said, supposedly. The topic is really obvious, getting into the Hall of Fame. Here was Pete Rose.
I don't see much sense in putting me on the ballot after I die. Because for a player to go into his or her Hall of Fame, it's more or less for your family and it's more or less for your fan base. And I'm big on both of those two things right there. And I know most of the people who rooted for me my whole career would love to see me in the Hall of Fame as a living player, not as someone who's 10 feet under. And I always thought about that. What good would it do my family if they put me in the Hall of Fame after I die?
Let me throw this at you quickly, Sully. I want you to respond. I started going crazy about this kind of thing with Ron Santo, that Ron Santo was put in the Hall of Fame after he passed. And the fact that he had to hide, as you know, his diabetes in the minor leagues, he'd have to sneak in the bathroom and shoot up and stuff like that. And he didn't want his roommate to know because he was afraid they would cut him immediately. And the career he had and the great ambassador he was as a broadcaster, and he lost his leg and the whole thing. And I remember watching the ceremony when they put him in, and his family is crying and stuff like that. And I've done a commentary, and it just angered me. Why the hell couldn't they put him in when he was alive? Because he should have been put in when he was alive. So I don't like this if all of a sudden, I'm not saying they shouldn't put him in, but if all of a sudden now this is big campaign to put him in because he's no longer here, that just infuriates the hell out of me. Pardon my French. I'm just curious to your reaction from what you heard from Pete.
Well, I think there are two things to consider here. One, Shoeless Joe Jackson was banned from baseball over 100 years ago. He's not in. So I don't know that there's any realistic expectation that Rose will get in. But, you know, to me, the problem that baseball had for decades now was that if you reinstate Rose, what are you allowing him to do? And are you raising the risk of another scandal if he's, you know, coaching or managing or has any kind of connection where he has, as I said before, inside information about games? You don't want to run that risk. You know, my shorthand answer was, you know, you can honor his past, but you can't give him a future. You can't give him a job in baseball. And I think that there was some thought along those lines in baseball's administration I've read, and I haven't confirmed this personally, that you know that Bud Selig had essentially offered him a deal that, you know, if you can straighten out, you can get reinstated. But he wasn't going to stop gambling, and when he met with Rob Manfred, he admitted that he was still betting on baseball. So, I mean, what was the point of that meeting? You know, you're not going to reinstate a guy who has not learned his lesson. And, you know, I think that it would be, I guess, closure for some people if Pete were enshrined in Cooperstown. But I don't see that as something that's likely to happen anytime soon. And I think that my experience has been that once the moment has passed, there won't be a lot of momentum down the road. So if it doesn't happen quickly, it I would guess will not happen at all.
No, I agree with your momentum thing, but I also throw this out there that I don't think it would ever happen with Rob Manfred as commissioner. That to me is pretty obvious, but who knows what the next commissioner, even though that momentum, you're absolutely right, will be gone. Who knows what that next commissioner might feel and think, and also the temperature of the whole thing. Sully, last one, and I appreciate your time. You obviously like, from what I see, and I think this is kind of it's rare you have such a general consensus, Terry Francona being hired by the Reds. He can't hit a home run. He can't bunt a ball, can't sacrifice bunt, but he's a spectacular human being, and he's a great people person, and I think it gives credibility to the Reds off the charts. I'm not a genius. I said right away the phone call I would make first is Francona. Let him tell me no, either it's because of his health or he doesn't want to work for the Reds. I never thought it would happen. But I said right away that would be the first phone call. This, to me, is a grand slam home run for the Reds.
Sure seems to be. I mean, this is a guy who's won the World Series, been manager of the year, I think, three times. And, he played briefly for the Reds. There was a number of people who were pushing for Barry Larkin. I don't know that that is a great fit, as great a player as Barry was. I'm not sure that he has that same human touch that Francona does, and he hasn't managed. So this is not an entry level position at the major league level. And Terry Francona brings credentials. And I tweeted about this. The last Reds manager who came in with the kind of resume that Francona has was Bill McKechnie, who got the job in 1938. So
that's right. I didn't forget about that.
and I never met Bill McKechnie, but, he had won the World Series. He'd won two pennants. And then he came in and won a World Series with the Reds. So
did you look that up, or did you realize that off the top of your head?
Oh, I did not realize. I suspected it.
Okay.
That's I was thinking cool. all the recent managers, and Davey Johnson, of course, won a World Series in the Mets, but that was a one-off.
Well, and the other thing too, you got Johnson, you got Jackie McKeon, Sparky was a nobody, but look what he turned out. You had Dusty. Right. They've had some really good managers in Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have. And, if you measure them by, what they had done when they got the job.
Sure.
I don't think there's any comparison other than McKechnie. But, obviously Sparky Anderson is a Hall of Fame manager and beloved still, I think, in Cincinnati. He had not managed. He was a coach with the Padres when he got that job. Davey Johnson had won one World Series with Mets with, a very loaded team. And I think was a very smart guy, but he did not have Francona's resume at that point.
No, he didn't. Last one. So I appreciate your time. No problem. It's good seeing you. You have a feeling on Mark Pope?
I've been impressed with him from a distance. I don't know him at all. I have not interviewed him. My freelance gigs right now are pretty Louisville centric. But he's obviously a very bright individual, and he has hit a lot of the right notes for the Kentucky fan base. I mean, the thing that, you know, I always had a reservation about John Calipari about was that, you know, he kept selling the idea that getting these guys to the NBA was the ultimate goal rather than winning championships. And I, you know, to a large extent, I think he did that as a marketing thing because that helped his recruiting.
Absolutely.
But it didn't resonate with the fan base the way that Mark Pope has. I think he understands that winning titles at UK is the ultimate goal. And if you get guys to the NBA, that's a bonus. And I think that's the way it should be.
I agree. Sully, just nice having a conversation. It's good seeing your face. You won't like this, but keep writing. You're really, 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 really good at it. And I hope you keep on writing for a long time, dude.
Well, you're very kind. I was not quite ready for your beard, but I will try to get accustomed to it.
I'm going to have to shave it next month. I don't know about you, but you got to get your skin checked. I have to get it every 6 months now. So, you know, my guy, this doesn't make any sense. And I trust my, I got a real doctor, real, like he says, he can see if there's spots through the beard, and he's had people beards down here. So I shaved 2 days before my last appointment. So I got to shave it next month. It's okay. I'd rather.
So you're not auditioning for ZZ Top. Is that?
Well, if I could sing and play the guitar, possibly, but there are two skills that I would be horrendous at. Thank you, Sully. God bless you.
All right.
Stay healthy. It's nice catching up, even though it was for the radio show. It's just nice catching up. My respect for you is off the charts, dude.
I appreciate it. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Sully. Tim Sullivan, really, 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 really good. And Jimmy, by the way, thanks for pulling up that Pete thing really fast from the other day. And I got to tell you, I don't know if guts is the right word. And I guess I don't like using that word, Jimmy, because he was just doing his job. In other words, the word he used was affection. He's a wordsmith much more than me. I wish I could tie words together like he can. That's why he was a hell of a columnist. And he could have affection for Pete Rose, yet still do his job. And I've kind of been the same way with a more harsher style of doing it. And there's too many people who might have an affection for a team or for someone, and as far as I'm concerned, they can't do their job. But that's my judgment of how you're supposed to do your job. I guess, is that a simplistic way of saying there's too many homers?
Yeah, I think so. And that you're right, though. It sometimes, and it shouldn't be this way, but it does take guts to do your job that way when it shouldn't be, because as you said, you're just doing your job. But there's a lot of times where the easier way would to just be a homer and go with the flow and whatever the majority of the crowd or the fans think, just regurgitate what they're saying. But that's not always doing the job.
Gives me a chill from a negative point of view. How about the story where he had he said a dozen black roses, that these roses are dead like you should be? Let me tell you, did I read all of it? No. Did I read a lot of his stuff? I'd find ways to get his stuff because it's not like internet today and all those kinds of things. But there were times I would get the paper late or something, or somebody would send it to me. Jimmy, he did not hold back on Pete at all. But here's the thing, and to me this is important, and there's still some of this that goes on today, and I don't like it. He never went after Pete for the sake of going after him. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And there's a difference. He's kind of a purist. It's one of the things I respect about him. He feels he's a really smart guy, by the way. I think that came across. If he feels this is the honest thing, he's going to sit down and write it.
Yeah, I mean, there's differences in writing something as a hit piece and just writing something that is, you know, just the situation.
I can tell you, in all the times I've read him, never, ever, 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 ever did I ever think he wrote a hit piece. Mm-hmm. Never. Never. It's one of the reasons why I respect him so much. The other thing is, he didn't duck anything. And he wasn't afraid to take anything on. My respect for him is off the charts. He's 70 years old, and I was sad when the Courier let him go. As Jimmy, I don't know how many 70-year-old columnists are left. Not very many.
Probably not very many.
And this has been going on for a while. If you're making any money, you're the first person, male or female, to go. More men than women because of the time period. I don't know if there's a 70-year-old gal, longtime columnist anywhere in sports in the country. I don't think so, because they haven't been around that long. And they should have been around a long time ago before they started getting hired, from their perspective and knowledge and all that kind of stuff. Not going there, but the point is, I wasn't saying because he was on. My respect for Sully is off the charts, off the charts. That was interesting. And I hadn't thought the Muhammad Ali thing in Cincinnati. Could I see this huge procession for Pete if he goes to Cincinnati? Yes. Could I see that happening? Yes. I have no inside information. I mean, and there would be so many older people because of when Pete played. There would still be some young people, but it would be more older people. It would be huge. I don't know about equal to Muhammad Ali. I don't know if you remember what happened in Louisville for Muhammad Ali. Maybe because, you know, Billy Crystal's eulogy, which is unbelievable. And yeah, I grew up playing basketball with Billy Crystal, so it meant a little bit more. Yeah, but he's still Billy Crystal. Yet Pete has tons of big people on an equal level to Billy Crystal. So that would be interesting. Anyway, that was enjoyable. Thank you to Deuce. Thank you also to Tim Sullivan. We have three sound bites left. We played them all. We played all the Pope?
Yes, we did.
I think we did. We might end up playing one more. We have some other stuff in the can that I want to play. If you want to, here's something I should be doing three times a day, and I don't even do it once a week. But the text line is
859-381-1313.
You say it like you know it at the top of your head. Alan Cutler, 1300 AM, 92.5 FM.
The Alan Cutler Show on ESPN 92.5. And back to No Filter Radio with Alan Cutler. Podcasts on Apple, Spotify, and Google, Monday through Friday.
I've been surprised at how coachable they are as a team. If I want to say anything I'm surprised by, this is one of the most coachable groups that I've ever been a part of. And so, to me, that's the biggest thing. And, you know, we just got to make sure that they're not stuck by our coaching and still allowed to just play the game and don't do it just because we said do it.
That was a great comment early this week. Alvin Brooks, associate head basketball coach for the University of Kentucky, and I like that, not a little, but a lot, in case you missed that earlier this week. We picked a couple of clips out to play. One of the things I asked Alvin, Jimmy, this would be clip number one, is that to the obvious, Alvin Brooks, what makes you a good coach?
I would say that I'm genuine, and so I think you can't coach someone until they know that you care. And I genuinely build relationships and show guys that I care about them as a person. And I would say my attention to details, like I feel like my attention to details separates me, but it also allows our players to be able to separate themselves. And then just finding different ways to help the program win. Like, I've been blessed to, you know, I didn't know this before I came here, but I've been blessed to be a part of a lot of winning in my career. And like at Baylor, in my 8 years, we won over 70% of our games. And so I feel like I know what it takes to win. And because I was blessed to learn it at an early age as a coach, I'm blessed to be a part of two national championships at two different junior colleges, back-to-back years, it helps show me what it takes to win no matter how many resources you have. And I've carried those ways to be able to help guys build the habits that.
It's a really good soundbite. And by the way, in that interview, he opened up about his family, his two kids who have autism, how Lexington is a really good place that can help his kids. So that tells you the obvious. He's not jumping after 1 year to be an assistant coach somewhere else. And look, I don't know. I was a little surprised he hadn't already become a head coach. Wouldn't surprise me if he stays here through with Pope for 10 years. And it wouldn't surprise me if this catapults him into being a head coach, but it's got to be very right for his family. I remember watching his dad play a long time ago when I told him that. I think it's a great hire. I like the staff tremendously, and I think he'd be a really, really, really good head coach. And there are people on this staff who will be head coaches. As a matter of fact, you can make a case that outside of Fox, who's been a head coach forever, and maybe he'll get another opportunity. Don't even know if he wants one. But I could see Fox and Pope being together is very, very good. Jimmy, I can see basically everyone on this staff becoming a head coach if they want to become a head coach. Partly because you're at Kentucky, it makes the next step easier. But the other part of it is to the kind of people that I believe that they are and the knowledge that they have and how they are, I don't like the word hip, but how they're so in tune with how to treat people today. Plus, each is learning a different sort of skill. I mean, some of these guys are learning Pope's offense. Not Fugger, he's been the offensive coordinator. But I think for a guy like Jason Hart, if you look at all the people that he's worked under and who coached him and stuff like that, you take a look at him, and this is like the icing on the cake for his doctorate degree to become a head coach. I'm a little surprised he hasn't become a head coach. So I think one of the things that will not be overlooked by me is how good this staff is and how good this staff will be. I just think it's that special and that good. Let me say something about Steph Curry. So he gets a letter. Did you see this, Jimmy, from this 9-year-old girl?
Uh-uh.
Didn't he, and I should have Googled this, I'm trusting my memory, hasn't he bankrolled like the women's golf team at his college or something like that? As I recall, he's done a bunch of things, not just for sports, but women's sports as well. And he's like kind of like the Pied Piper for helping people out. Well, this got to him. This 9-year-old girl wanted to get a pair of Steph Curry shoes. But she quickly discovered, and Curry, as I think many of you know, makes a lot of money selling shoes. It's one of the reasons why you go to China, because you can sell a lot of shoes there. And they didn't have girl sizes. So Curry's taking care of that. And he handwrote a note back to her, which obviously they use as part of the story, which I thought was really cool. Tells me a lot about Curry, the person per se, the person per se. Want to mention Rondo. I think Rondo, if he wants to be, will be a great head coach. Don't know if he wants to be. And Doc Rivers, who he played for, and I have said this many times, I think Rondo has not get enough credit for what he did in Boston and for what he did in the Lakers as a conduit, as a leader, as helping guys out, as being as smart as he is when they happen to win championships. I'm not saying he's the reason why. That's not fair and it's not true. I do believe he was a much bigger reason why than he's gotten credit for. As a leader, talking to guys, that kind of stuff. Rondo is one of the smartest basketball players in the last 20 years. Does he have the temperament? He's had some issues with his temperament. He's had some run-ins. Okay? I mean, that's well known. I have always believed for a long time, if he got all of his act together, he could become a great head coach. So he's been hired by the Milwaukee Bucks. And Doc Rivers calls him as smart as any player he's ever been around. And I buy that. And I don't know if he would have ended up with Cal if it wasn't for the last maybe thing that he went through. And I think he got his degree. I'm not sure. I know he was working on it. But anyway, I'm happy that he's in coaching. And one of the things he said was, you know, I need to find out, even though as a player you kind of know what's going on, but it's different when you go through it, all the time you have to spend in meetings and film sessions and all that kind of stuff. Because although it's not the amount of time you have to do in college, because you have your summers off a lot more than you do if you're a college coach, he wants to see what it's like. I'm not saying he's going to become a head coach. I don't know if he wants to become a head coach. I don't know if somebody would give him the title to be him a head coach. And I think if he has a couple of years under Doc Rivers and wants to do it and keeps clean, do I think it'll happen? Yeah, I do, by the way. I do. But I'm excited to see what he does. I'm just excited. I think it's a very smart hire. He's kind of like a Pied Piper. He's not a yeller. He's not a screamer. But if I'm a young point guard, what he does, I think, is absolutely unequivocally off the charts. It really is. So I'm excited for him and curious. I think curious is the word. You have a play from Kirk Cousins last night?
I do. I actually have the final touchdown of the game.
Okay. Tell me when you have it. Knowing you, it's really fast, and here it is.
Motion with Cousins, and they're going to gun it, and it's caught to Darrell Hodge. 35, 30,
take it, baby.
20, 15, 10, 5, bang. Drive home safely. Oh, my goodness.
Welcome to the game, Kadarrell. Are you serious?
A walk-off for Kadarrell Hodge and the Falcons. 45 yards. Well, I just talked about how Kadarrell understands zone coverage. That's all he did was hook up in the hole, and Tampa forgot to tackle him.
Now, I don't think Hodge is going in the Hall of Fame. Okay. He's got his career in front of him. You know, this is a really good start and that kind of thing. But the point is, I've always liked Kirk Cousins a lot more than his reputation, because I think he can really chunk the football. And I think he's really accurate. And he's been around forever. It's the 25th time in the history of the National Football League, and this number's been out there from last night, that anybody's hit 500 yards. But, Jimmy, it wasn't just his 500 yards, which is ridiculous as it is. It's the numbers. Okay, that pass won the game against Tampa Bay 36-30. Jimmy, he was 42 of 58. That's over 70%. It's like 72%. Four touchdowns and one pick. I really like him a lot. I'm not saying he's going to lead in the Super Bowl, but I just don't think he's got enough respect for the kind of quarterback that he is. He throws a sweet ball and a tight spiral, and he gets it out quickly. And I don't know if he's never been with the right team, and I don't know if Atlanta is the right team. I don't see Atlanta winning the Super Bowl this year. Nobody does. But there's something to be said with playing with the right team. And maybe Atlanta will become that. I just have always really liked him. I'm not saying I'd have picked him first in the NFL, second in the NFL, third in the NFL, fourth in the NFL. I've always kind of thought he was for consistently in the lower part of the top 10 for years and years. Yeah. And I don't think most people look at him that way, and that's fine. And that's fine.
I think it's because he doesn't have anything glaring that jumps out as like an elite skill. But he's always just been consistently very good. He hasn't been consistently, you know, top 2, 3, 4 in the league, but he's consistently very good. Like, he's in that tier years ago, like when Jimmy G was with the Niners. I think Jimmy G has just always been average. He's just been good. He will stay afloat, and he will tread water with the team with a very good defense or skill guys, but he's never going to win you games. Where Kirk Cousins, he's able to win you games. He will drive you down the field, but if you try to find, like, he's been accurate, but it's just he doesn't have those Mahomes types of plays or Josh Allen or Lamar. He's not any of those guys, but he's always going to be, like you said, he'll always hover right around that 10th best in the league.
Yeah.
Which is, you could do much worse than that.
Absolutely. He's like a big step down from the guys you're talking about, but he's a big step up
right. From
so many other starting quarterbacks. It's not even funny. I mean, let's put it this way. Had he been in the spot where Garoppolo was in San Francisco, do I think Garoppolo would have won? Do I think that San Francisco would have won more? I do, by the way.
Yeah.
I do, because the talent around him would have enabled him, he would have been more of a point guard.
Mm-hmm.
Which really what the great quarterbacks are. Most of the time, they're point guards distributing the ball. That's what Purdy is doing, who I think is really good. I think he's really, really good, by the way. And he still doesn't get enough love because of where he wasn't drafted. I don't know. Did you watch the Met game last night?
I had it on for the most part, and I actually had it on during the ninth inning. But I was kind of watching it here and there, and then once the football game started, I would flip back and forth between them.
I stuck with it, and I stuck with it for two reasons. Let me know when you get this. Howie Rose has been a great announcer for a long time. He makes seven figures for calling Met games. He's definitely a Hall of Famer. There's no question about it. He has stood the test of the time, and this is about as good of a call as you can get when Alonzo ended up winning the game when it looked like the Mets were out of it.
Williams sets. Here's the pitch. Swing and a fly ball to right field. Pretty well hit. Freelick back at the wall. He jumps. It's gone. He did it. He did it. Pete Alonso with the most memorable home run of his career. Pumps his fist as he rounds second. It's a three-run homer. He's given the Mets a 3-2 lead. They all pour out of the dugout. Alonso on his way to home plate. They're waiting for him. He hits the plate. He is first congratulated by Nimmo. Hugged by Lindor. There are a dozen Mets waiting for him outside the dugout. Pete Alonso keeps this fairy tale season going with the fairy tale swing of his career. 3-2 New York.
I think it's a great call because it's really descriptive, and it's called stair-stepping. Now, I've heard Rose enough. He went crazy after the home run. He went higher than he normally would. Duh, this is one of the biggest home runs in the history of the New York Mets going back to 1960. If there have been 10 bigger plays since the Mets have been around, I can't think of it. And I go back to when Casey Stengel, and they were the awful Mets, and they lost 120 games only to be topped this year by the great Chicago White Sox. But that's just a great call. It's a great call. And I got to tell you, the beauty of baseball, on the other side, they had shots of people in the stands, Milwaukee fans that were crying, that were literally crying. Because they basically thought the game was over. It was set up perfectly by Pat Murphy. Perfectly. Williams is a really good closer. If he was in New York or Chicago or Los Angeles, he'd be an even bigger name. He's been one of the best closers in baseball for years. You know, and Murphy was asked after the game, and it was kind of a stupid question, and he answered it perfectly. He goes, I give him the ball tomorrow. And basically the next day or the next day or the next day or the next day, he threw a changeup that was too high. If that pitch is down a foot lower, odds of him hitting that pitch are not really good. And you know, one of the announcers said, oh, he really got it all. He did not get it all. It's the only reason why that one went out, because he's so strong.
Yeah.
He didn't hit it on the fat part of the bat. He didn't get it all. His muscle got that ball out. Most major leaguers wouldn't have, that ball wouldn't have gone to the warning track. And so the TV announcers, I thought, I'm going, really? I forgot who on TV said that. I'm going, wait a second, you do this and you've been in a million games and you're saying he didn't get it all. If he got it all, it would have been in to change up. It's not going to the upper deck. But he didn't come close to getting it all. He muscled it out based upon his strength.
Yeah, there's a few guys in the league that could have got that out, and Alonso is on that short list. But like you said, and that's actually, I read that's the first opposite field home run he's ever given up in his career, and only the second home run of the season total he's given up in 21 appearances.
Here's where I feel bad. That pitch is going to haunt him the rest of his life.
Yeah, I was just thinking, I hope he doesn't get, you know, pick whichever closer, kicker, whatever sport you want. I hope that this isn't the deciding point where he goes down, because like you said, that's, he's going to remember that.
Ralph Branca is the pitcher who gave up the home run to Bobby Thompson in the early 50s. And that changed the world in baseball back then. And ironically, the two of them became very good friends and used to do banquets together. And I've interviewed both coming to Lexington for harness racing and stuff like that. And Branca was able to make jokes of it. And he said, look, it's a pitch. He was a good pitcher, by the way. It was a pitch. I gave up a home run in the worst time. It's not going to define who I am. He made money on the speaking circuit from that, because he was a fun, you know, he was wanted and was a good after dinner speaker and stuff like that. And so it was with him. And I remember talking to him and said, you know, I don't want to ask you. He said, go ahead, ask. I've been asked a million times. I'm happy to. I felt a little uncomfortable, which wasn't usual for me. And he's making me feel comfortable. And then after we did the interview, we stood around and talked for about 20 minutes, that kind of thing. I go back to the station, but what a nice man. He refused to allow that to bug him. Billy Buckner, on the other hand, the ground ball that went through his legs in 1986, which everyone says, and they get it wrong, cost the Red Sox the World Series. It's not true, because there was a Game 7, which Boston lost. So they had another opportunity. And Buckner was a quasi-Hall of Famer, and it ruined his life. He had to leave Boston. It got so strong, even as a minor league coach, it bothered him so much. And I'm not a doctor. I don't play one on TV. He passed away from cancer. And this is just how I believe. You believe what you believe. I believe the crap that he took and what he internalized for that ball going through his legs shortened his life. And the threats that he had for years and years, and finally they brought him back to Boston. And by the way, the part about him that nobody realized, and even the old timers forget, he could fly. And he ripped his ankle so bad that they said he'd never play again. And he had a quasi Hall of Fame career without being able to run at all. And he had to soak his foot after every single game for like 20 years just to play baseball. He was a great baseball player based upon the fact that he couldn't move. And they ruined his life. And I got to tell you, when I see a home run like that, after I was really happy for the Mets, I'm a Yankees fan, but I was happy for the Mets. The Yankees and Mets play, I root for the Yankees, but I like the Mets to win. It's neither here nor there. I thought of Buckner and how his life was ruined because he's caught that ground ball a million times in the light, went through his legs. And so, you know, the agony defeat, when I saw those Milwaukee fans crying in the shot today where they were taking the beer.
Mm-hmm.
From the locker room, they were taking it out. And by the way, I hear Pat Murphy is a great guy. And what they've done with that team, they didn't play Corbin Burns. They're not paying people a lot of money, and they're still back up there. Their manager goes. I mean, they are a small market team that has figured it out, and their fan base is great. As happy as I was for the Mets, I felt bad for the Milwaukee people. Is that goofy?
No, I think more people feel that way. I mean, I'm the exact same way. Is when you get excited. Because you've all, either as a fan or as a player, or at some point in your life, you've experienced that other side. Maybe you're that pitcher that gave up the hit, or maybe your son was the pitcher that gave up the hit, and then you immediately click back to, oh, I've been there, and you hate it.
Yeah, I feel bad for him. Yeah. Jimmy, thank you for everything this week. Thank you for all our guests today in particular. Deuce Williams, go get some ducks. I'm telling you, I see some duck soup, not soup in our future.
I'll take some jambalaya. I'll take it.
And you know what? If Deuce says he's a good cook, I'll bet he's a good cook.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm going to guess he'll give some to his mother-in-law who will walk it over to the house. That'll be my guess. Yeah. Funny how I said that. Neither here. And by the way, he doesn't have to do that, but you know what I'm saying. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Thank you for telling your friends. Have yourself a great weekend. It's weird. Outside of Keeneland, is anything else sports-wise going on? And then next week, boom! It's crazy how many things are going on. Media day next week. Oh, all the stuff going on. Have a blessed week. Thank you for tuning in. Brad Taylor's coming up next. Matthew and Jimmy at 10 on Monday. I'll be back at noon. Thank you, thank you, thank you for tuning in. Alan Cutler, 1300 AM, 92.5. Thanks, Jimmy, FM.
Listen to the Alan Cutler Show.